I was thinking of saying something like, well, you must be having a hard time now, and how's it going, and having terrible pain and want to leave, but everybody looks fine, am I right? No? We can talk about that, though. But everybody right now looks good. I'd like to start by talking about what Angie was discussing about moving, and that we're always moving. Especially she was talking about our bodies. That's what that book is about. I only read the first chapter. But I've been noticing more this year, the last few months. I'm not saying it hasn't happened before, but I've just happened to notice that I haven't been looking for it. Just little subtle things. I don't know if I'm adjusting them or they're adjusting me, like things in my spine. I don't think it could be seen from the outside. Or my shoulders decided that, they can let go. My spine itself, and its relation to where it's touching the sacrum and the cushion, I can get a sense of is that stacked, whatever you call it, stacked in the optimum way. And it's not that I look in there and ask about it. I hope I don't start doing that. That would be horrible. Just to start always looking at inside and feeling your shoulders and your body. It's more that it just happens. So please don't think I'm saying to start looking for it. It's a fine point, but it's just illustrating how we are moving. Our bodies are moving in our alignment into, I guess, and out of our alignment. And our mind. Well, we talked about that. Our instructions are, our suggestions are, to not to watch our mind, not even to note our thoughts, although some techniques are based on that. Ours suggestions are to let the thoughts come and to let the thoughts go. And it may be that a new thought comes on top of that other thought that you let go, but you know, you tried and you let it go, you didn't hold on to it. It can be related, and I'm just talking about what happened to me this morning, actually, and a series of thoughts come in that I feel like I'm holding on to them, even though I don't prefer them. And if anything can be called stopping, that might be it. And And yet, it's me maybe trying to stop or hold on. Even as I said, they were not particularly welcome thoughts. But sometimes we really hold on to those. And of course, with the welcome thoughts, same thing. But that's stopping. And it's funny, I was thinking that, and I didn't bring any books with me. I borrowed some. But I have a note in the beginning of my journal. I think it says, I said it was on page 2. Oh yeah, in my journal that I began in this last spring, I was reading about Taquan in a book by Stephen Addis called The Art of Zen, and it was not a Zen book, but it was Zen art, and Taquan was a renowned, accomplished master of Zen teaching and art. And this is a quote from his Taquan's mysterious record of immeasurable wisdom. He said, "The mind of attachment arises from the stopping mind. Stopping means the mind is being detained by some matter, which may be any matter at all. If there is some thought within the mind, though you listen to the word spoken by another, you will not really be able to hear him or her. This is because your mind is stopped with your own thoughts." When facing a single tree, if you look at a single one of its red leaves, you will not be able to see all the others. When the eye is not set on any one leaf and you face the tree with nothing at all in mind, any number of leaves are visible to the eye without limit. Then the mind is also something that does not function if it becomes attached to a single situation. The mind that stopped or is moved by something, this is the affliction of the abiding place. To be called to respond without interval is the wisdom of all Buddhas. That first part I could easily understand, but I always forget what people say to me. Well, it's much worse lately, but I remember I've always had a hard time understanding oral instruction. I need you know, to do it or to read it. But if your mind is busy, because my mind is busy with my own thoughts, then I can't hear others. Eyes are busy with your own thoughts. You can't see others. It also reminded me of a line that I've been, I guess struggle would be the right word, struggling with for decades. If you put the mind forward, if you put yourself forward and practice and confirm the self, that is delusion. For all things to come forward and practice and confirm the self is enlightenment. That's from Dogen's Ginjo Koan. I think almost every time I'm reminded of that, and on such occasions I'm reminded of it several times a day, places like this, or when we're in the mountains. You want to see things as they are for the first time, as they are originally, as they are. But I'll speak for myself. It's not all the time that I can see beyond my own projections, sentiments, in a good way. It's in a good way, too. I'm moved by them. And I think that's, I don't know, he says that's not okay. But I guess I'm moved by things and they're stirring something in me immediately. And that means something in my memory or emotion. I think I'm going to give that a pass, though, because that's when I'm walking around. That's not when I'm sitting. But still, sometimes I can see a flower as if that's the only flower I've ever seen, and it's the only flower in the world. And sometimes I'll walk right past a flower, even step on it. A wildflower. And here, when we're walking around doing Outdoor Canyon, it becomes more and more, there's more and more of the ability to see things. They're coming forward because we're open. We haven't filled up our mind with our own stuff, our ideas about life. It can be a big thing or just whatever we're worrying about at that time. What if we expect a duck to look like? For instance, when I walked down to the lake, I guess it was during our walking canyon, I think, or when I had time, I was more open, and I saw some ducks, and I walked toward the ducks, and I just saw this flash of golden yellow. And that was the first thing I saw. And well, immediately it was a beak, of the duck. But it was just the way the sun hit it. Usually I walk by the lake and I'm going to go to the lake and have this experience or that experience. And I'm projecting what's going to happen. So now I hope I haven't spoiled it for you now that you'll try to have that experience either. But you know what I'm talking about, right? So stopping, I liked the part about stopping is our attachment, is our problem, one of our problems is stopping. It may be because it's actually contrary to the laws of the universe. Maybe we're thinking we can stop things. that we can be perfectly still, as Angie was saying, it's not happening. So we might as well go with the flow. And yet we have our own life, and we have our own human necessities, and our own provisional, we could say, self in the world. And I'm also attracted to poems and Zen masters' writing that touches on what can't be expressed about what our individual beingness and what we could call the universal mind, the universal workings, what that working is. And it's been described as workings. If you've ever read Tozen's Jeweled Mirror Samadhi, it's a reference to the jade workings of what's blending together the absolute and the relative. I don't know this, but it was suggested to me by in an appendix of some book of poetry that the jade workings of the mind, or the jade workings, however they say, the jade workings being blended together, workings can be described as a machine, a pivot, or a loom. And I like that one about the loom, because I could understand it. I never could. Yeah, I was just trying to visualize a pivot between the relative and the absolute. Is it like a, you know, a seesaw, or what is it like? The fundamental point. So maybe I can find what I'm looking for, but, you know, I don't know if I can. Because I made myself notes, but I, oh yeah. This is a poem by Po Chui, one of probably my favorite, if I had to choose, Chinese poet. And in it, I noticed he's talking about the jade. He's asking a rock that holds up his musical instrument, which is a chin, which I guess is like a kota, maybe? It's pretty long, and it's strummed. A star falling, this is the rock, a star falling, thinking the whole sky must be coming down too. You could only mourn that burial in mud beneath a deep stream. Here on earth, it's nothing like life in heaven's constant array. After holding a loom of origins there, what's this chin to you? But when I wipe you clean, full of affection, do you understand? You say nothing, so it's clear enough we share a kindred mind. I guess I like the, again, without just saying it, the way he's bringing in this human empathy with an insentient being, as they call it sometimes, and also that empathy, and also the empathy that that insentient being was one of, maybe the, I saw it as the stars in the sky, maybe the loom of origin, maybe that, they referred it to the jade loom in other places, because it, I think they're talking about white jade. I had a lot of time to think about this summer. So it's the relationship of the star has now come to earth and buried in the mud, and then he finds it. And uses it to hold up one end of his instrument. And also the relationship of maybe sort of as an intermediary between humans and this loom of the sky, this working of the universe. But that's not why I like the poem, because I didn't know any of that about the loom of origins. I mean, I didn't know what it was. I had to look it up. But it didn't matter, because it spoke something without saying it. That's why I'm not explaining or telling you about the theory of life right now, which is seemed to be where I was trying to go the last 3 hours preparing for this talk. But if you have any simple questions, I'd be glad to, or comments, I'd be glad to entertain them in my mind. Paul?
Listening to quote Hakuin, and when he was talking about stopping, it seemed like he wasn't, I was trying to compare that to my own experience, and it seemed like what he was pointing at was kind of that moment when it's almost like a thought will arrest us, right? But it'll kind of come into our mind, and then it's kind of like it'll initiate this kind of like form of like, you know, either A, like, oh, that's something that's really interesting, or that's something that provokes like a response out of me.
Yeah.
So it kind of like, it stops me in my tracks. So it could be any number of things, right? But something that I often notice, like it will provoke either some sort of like desire, or, and then that kind of like sucks me into this funnel of thought. Or it can be like, oh no, I don't want to think that.
Yeah.
And then there can be a whole dialogue, kind of internal dialogue of oh, you know, what does this mean? How do I avert this? How do I get away from it?
Yeah.
That's kind of how I interpreted what you were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not compared to, I guess, like the other form of stopping, which is like not engaging with any of it. It seems like it's kind of different.
Well,
that's how I interpreted
it. I think that's true, but also your thoughts aren't stopping.
Right.
You're stopping.
So it's kind of like not stopping the thoughts themselves. It's just stopping oneself. Is that what you're saying?
No. Well, I'm saying that you can't stop your thoughts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So really we can just notice that we can't stop our thoughts, and we can gradually become less interested in them, and they sort of become more in the background, I think, to say it as if it's a simple thing. But you're saying that the thought stops you. So we're told to let them arise and let them depart. We're not, you know, we're not told to stop them, luckily. But sometimes we want to hold on to them, and sometimes we want to push them away. And that's not working for us, right? And they'll be there until we, you know, it's just like you find yourself like this and then you gradually come like this. You can have, you can experience as the days go by, probably not engaging. But you're always being, you're always ising, you're never stopping, and therefore your thoughts aren't stopping. I don't think I should say any more. I'm just letting it, my mouth run off about it. So.
So I guess one question I have, and maybe it'd be interesting to hear what your experience is with this, is so on occasion I have this like really nasty person, you know, like just ramble off this judgment of like somebody probably next to me, you know, or whatever, somebody across the room, like, oh yeah, blah, 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 blah. So it's like this murmur of judgment, right? So that would be an example to me of like my kind of being stopped by my thought, or like either A, I'm like, oh yeah, or I'm like, oh no, like I'm judging somebody. I should not be judging people, you know. So, what's your experience dealing with that phenomenon?
Oh, I've had it. Yeah, a lot of experience.
Well, I guess the question is you know, what is when that happens, and when we get kind of arrested by that sort of negative thought, right? It freaks us out. We're like, oh no, I'm not supposed to be judgmental. Or you know, like. Or it's like, or we get into like, oh yeah, you know, they just don't get it, you know, da 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 da. I think so. There's between those two is something, right? How would you describe that? Like, what? How do I navigate between having some sort of reaction to those two things, well, or one thing, but two reactions?
Yeah, I think that we're in the right posture.
Just
deal with it. Yeah, I mean, those things happen to me. The only thing, times I really notice it is because I'm keeping myself occupied all day. Maybe a lot of times because I don't want know what's on my mind. But when I wake up in the morning, you know, I can just lie there and I'm just vulnerable. My thoughts will just take off. And finally I realize, you know, I've got to deal with this. I have to get up and sit. Not because I have to sit or else I'll be a bad person, but because I need a fighting chance here with these thoughts. I mean, that's the way it is for me in the morning. So that's why I say we're in the right position, but we're not going to turn them off. But, you know, you are judging yourself when you say you shouldn't be having the thoughts. All you're doing is adding extra thoughts, as you said. So you actually, this body, and it could be that when you're thinking, as Uchiyama said, you're like this. You know, he showed a picture of the thinker in his book, Approach to Zen. And you're thinking when you're just, you know, and also you can notice the emotion. I can feel in my body emotions arising. I feel them in here. I don't know if other people do, but I'm sure a lot of people do, but probably everyone has a place. I can feel it in my body, and I can make sure that I haven't gone along with it in body and mind. I can let go of it physically. I can let go physically. There's things I can do. This is in a split second, right? This is not something that I'm doing so much as something that's happening, and I was actually thinking about this today when I was sitting. Actually, I was thinking about it after I was sitting. It was slowly coming. It was a painful feeling. And that one went away. And another one just worded a different way. You know, a memory. It was a memory, really. Came back. And later I thought, well, Angie said yesterday that being a bodhisattva isn't just opening yourself to everything, whether it's good or bad. You know, it's having some wisdom. And what else? What other word did she use? Anyway, wisdom's a good word.
So trust.
Trust, yeah. So when I wasn't sitting, I happened to think about that. Because she had said that, and I thought, okay, I didn't enjoy that. I didn't enjoy those thoughts. I didn't try to stop them. I don't know, they just went away. But for a long time, I've tried not to drive thoughts away. I even have a little joke I make to myself, which is, hold that thought. And then in its way, it's, of course I don't want to hold the thought, but it's kind of, here. Do your best, or something like that.
So would you say like that's kind of, because I was trying to think while you were talking, I was trying to think of like, what is it about, like, for instance, like when I have a judgmental thought that kind of like makes me stop and kind of like suddenly kind of power to this thought that comes by, you know, and it's like, I guess it's like that I'm scared of what it potentially means about me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm scared that, like, oh no, you know, I'm a mean man, or like maybe I'm a horrible person. You know, I shouldn't be having this thing because it means something horrible about me. Or, yeah. So I don't know. Like, so
yeah,
going
sure.
back to like hold this thought, which is perhaps like a, you know, not. Well, I guess like making a certain room that it doesn't have to mean anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, like don't just initially kind of feel like, you know, kind of be convinced that it's inherently meaningful just because it went through your head.
Yeah, and you're not engaged in doing this. Remember, you're engaged in sitting, letting your thoughts come and go, but having noted that. You can think about it later and say, wow, am I really a terrible judgmental person? And you go around and ask everyone for a mustard seed who is not a horrible judgmental person, and you won't end up with one. Yeah, student.
A text that I think is pretty well known is that one, Realizing Genjo Koan by Okamura.
Mm-hmm.
And a beautiful, clear writer, and I really like the metaphor he uses of opening the hand of thought.
Oh yeah, I love that. Yeah.
And I derive some aid and comfort on my cushion after having heard or read recently from a scientist or a doctor the fact that physiologically those thoughts are involuntary, just like your heartbeat.
Right.
So the whole issue of taking myself to task for all these thoughts, you know, the planning, the agenda, the back and the forth, up and down, it was really a load off, because to hear that simple statement that you're thinking all the time and don't think it's going to be otherwise, and it's as involuntary as your heartbeat or having to take a breath when you need air.
And it influences or is influenced by, I don't know which comes first.
And
your breath and
well,
your heart.
The upshot for me of the whole thing is how freeing it was, because now it really does revolve around how you react to what's going on. And there's an interesting article in a recent New Yorker that talks about Buddhism. Stephen Batchelor has a book, and another guy I think named Wright But, oh, God, what was the point in there? Damn. Oh, it's not what you are, it's what you do. So now if the thoughts are coming, whether you want them to or not, there's no sense of being a good person for stopping them or a bad person for not being able to. They're coming. So now what do you do with it? And so it's not what you are. And that is something you could construct out of all these crazy thoughts coming away. It's what you do. You see this stuff coming. It's just a thing like any other object. And now it's up to my, what do I intend, I guess, or something like that.
Yeah. Yes.
When you were talking about the leaves and how you see one individual leaf and you don't see the tree.
You know what? I can't hear well enough to hear what you
said. When you were talking about the leaves and the tree, how if we see one individual one, we don't see the tree, sort of like us and our thoughts. You know, I feel like one individual thought can't be the full us. It's not the full tree. And it reminds me a little bit like, it makes me think about emptiness, what Andy said yesterday and you said today. And I feel like emptiness for me, we need metaphors. The closest to it is the piano or any instrument, because it is empty, it's silence. And we write these notes with these rhythms, like one and two and three, and we break the silence with it to create this vibration. If you study the notes one by one, or like play them one by one, sometimes they even sound odd. But after you practice and practice and practice, you don't even think about it. It's just one beautiful piece of music. So sort of like form and emptiness, they no longer exist, you know, or this is that and that is this. And this practice has been very much like that for me. It's been when you sit and you just let go, and you just do it over and over and over again, eventually there's this one beautiful piece of music that you're able to hear. So I think that really resonated with a lot of things.
Well, what you said really resonated with me. Beautiful.
Thanks, Lala. I was just wondering if you would mind just repeating that quote from Dogen that you said.
The one about when the self goes forward.
Yeah, about the illusion and the self going forward.
Okay. when you carry the self forward and it practices and confirms all things, that is illusion, the self going out to something. When all things come forward and practice and confirm the self, that is enlightenment.
Can you say it one more time?
It's not going to be the same. when the self goes forward and practices and confirms all things, that is delusion. When all things come forward and practice and confirm the self, that is enlightenment. But right after that, I wrote it down somewhere, but I don't think I'll be able to find my notes. Those who are realized within illusion, is that it? Are,
yes, that's it.
Are enlightened, is that it? Right? Yes. Those who are greatly realized within illusions are enlightened. So, we got it.
Not to worry.
Not to worry. Karen?
I just appreciate it when you speak, when you spoke last year and you speak this year. I try to thank you last year and it didn't come out right, but what I mean is that your talks are very approachable, meaning you say them in such a way that it makes me feel like, oh, I see myself in Paulo moving along where you maybe don't understand the poem 100% the first time you read it, but something is there that's resonating and that seems like it the way it is for me. Like, I don't really understand what you just said about in that quote. I don't understand it, but I get little hints here and there and write them on a little piece of paper. This practice has been so humbling this time, and maybe everyone's not at that painful point, but I am absolutely at the painful point already. And unfortunately, I'm leaving today, so I won't get to go forward with it. But anyway, I'll try to continue with it at home, and I just appreciate, you know, having been here.
I appreciate having met you and been roommates, and you offered to top off my tea today, and you brought me treats. What can I say? Thank you. I'm sorry you're leaving.
Four other roommates. Wow, what an amazing quiet space. So beautiful. Thank you.